Welcome to episode 146 of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Rick Klaw, editor, anthologist, columnist, and bookseller. Klaw is the editor of the recent anthologies Ray Guns Over Texas and The Apes of Wrath. Stay tuned for my interview with Rick Klaw. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Rick Klaw, editor of the new anthology, The Apes of Wrath. Rick, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here, Jeff.
Sure. Well, if someone listening hasn't heard about The Apes of Wrath yet, how would you describe the anthology?
Well, it's a literary survey of apes in literature. Apes have had a long history in literature, going back to Aesop, and have been part of literature ever since. And so I wanted to do an anthology that kind of showcased all this. But also along the way, I also wanted to touch on other aspects of apes and pop culture. They've been a big part of pop culture as well, as anybody who'd seen Planet of the Apes would know, or the continued popularity of King Kong. And in the book, I also, besides the 17 stories, I also included 4 essays on different aspects of pop culture.
Sure. And do you remember how you originally came up with the idea of the theme of Apes of Wrath?
I've always loved apes since I was a small child. So it's just one of those things that I've always found fascinating, apes. And there's only been one other ape anthology ever. Oddly, there's only been one other before this one. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it'd be kind of a cool book to get together. I used to always explain to people, you know, I'd always go on, loudly and vociferously. Am I saying that right? about, you know, how important apes are for, in pop culture there's apes in all these different parts of culture, and people look at me like I'm nuts. So I said, you know what? I'm going to put a book together on it. And originally, I was shopping around a pop culture history of apes, and I didn't get that much traction for it. There was some interest, and I've written some essays about it. But then I was talking to Tachyon, and they were interested in me doing an anthology for them. And we had gone back and forth on several different topics. And I said, hey, what about this apes anthology idea? And at first, they rejected it, and then I talked Jacob into it, Jacob being the publisher of Tachyon.
And so, as you mentioned, Planet of the Apes is probably the most well-known popular culture example of anthropomorphized apes. Why do you think we're so fascinated with apes?
Well, part of it, apes, they represent cracked mirror images of ourselves. Of anything in the animal kingdom, they're the most like humans, of course. The old thing about 98% of our DNA is like a chimp's. All that, and you can see bits of humanity in apes. You can look at them and say, "Hey, we act like that." You know, we do that same kind of motions in our faces and our hands, and you know, they live in groups, all that kind of stuff. And it enables us to tell stories, for good or ill, that we couldn't tell about ourselves, but we can use apes as our proxies. Tell these same stories, and we can identify with what they're doing. It's one of the reasons, like Rise of the Planet of the Apes in particular, works so well, is we could all understand what was going on in Caesar's head, the alienation, the being, you know, kind of the outcast, and we all understand that. You don't have to be an ape to understand that, especially when you're dealing with geeks,
sure,
geek culture. We all have that kind of feeling.
And what did you think of Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
I loved it. It's one of the reasons I have, Rupert Wyatt doing the introduction to the book. Rupert was, you know, I loved the movie so much, and I wanted him to be part of the book. And so I contacted him, and he was thrilled to be doing the introduction, and I was thrilled to have him because, like I said, he understood. And the introduction, or the foreword, technically, that he did for the book shows they really understood what I was trying to do with the apes. And it was a perfect person to do the foreword for the book.
That's great. Are you currently working on any other anthologies?
Actually, I am. I did a book for FACT, which is the Phantom Association of Central Texas, called Ray Guns Over Texas. And I've actually turned it in. It's a an anthology of original Texas science fiction. Original science fiction by Texas authors. And it's 19 original stories, I believe. And it was fun to do. It's the first time somebody's done something like this since the 1980s.
And who are some of the contributors to that?
Stina Leicht is in there. So is Brad Denton. And, you ask these questions. I can't remember. You know, it's funny because when you're done with an anthology, it's weird. When you're editing an anthology, when you're done, because I've turned this book in.
Right.
And until the book comes out, your brain goes elsewhere.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, I'm going to work on something else now. So you put that all aside. Mark Finn is in that book.
Great. Do you have a tentative publication date on that yet?
Yes, that book is coming out at WorldCon at Labor Day weekend, which is in San Antonio this year, okay. The World Science Fiction Convention.
Yep.
And that was one of the reasons they wanted to do it, was great. To have the book come out then. It was a fun book to put together. And Neil Barrett Jr. is in the book, of course. Joe Lansdale's in the book. Michael Moorcock is in the book. It's all starting to come flooding in now.
Those
are all original stories from them.
Great.
We'll
look for that when it's out later this summer. Well, I know that you've written essays about science fiction, comics, and you've also worked as an editor. You edited Weird Business, a hardcover comics anthology, as well as many other books. What are you reading these days that really excites you? Are there any comics or novels or writers that you feel aren't getting the attention they deserve?
Well, there's always some. You know, it's funny. I was just looking at Zoran Zikovich again, who I hadn't read in a couple of years, but there was an interesting magazine, International Science Fiction, did a thing about him. Zoran's I want to say Bosnian, but I think he's a Chechen. I'm getting confused there, but he's from the former Yugoslavia, and he's an amazing writer.
Right.
And then there's they just reissued a Gerald Kirsch book, Nightshades and Operations. Which is, what am I looking at? No, sorry, Night Shades and Damnations. It was just been reissued. And Gerald Kirsch is one of these forgotten writers. He's firmly in that, you know, Bradbury, you know, that kind of Twilight Zone stuff that in the 50s and 60s.
Sure.
And they just reissued a bunch of his stuff, and it's amazing, his stuff.
Do you know who did the reissues off the top of your head?
No, I don't, because I don't have it sitting in front of me. And it was a small press, and, you know. Yeah, well,
I know that Harlan Ellison has talked about the influence of Kirsch before.
Right, and it's actually Nightmares was. I think this is only the first time it's the first time it's been reprinted since its original printing back in '69, which Ellison did the introduction to. Kirsch, of course, was also a influential. He wrote Night in the City, the famous crime novel, became a movie in the '50s. More recent writers, I'm a big fan of Jeff Vandermeer's, but that's not like a secret to probably anybody that listens to your podcast.
Right.
Not that I'm, and full disclosure, I've worked with Jeff. Jeff had me in a couple of his anthologies. I did stuff for his steampunk anthologies.
Sure.
Two different ones. I was in the Steampunk Bible and the original steampunk book. Comic-wise, it's interesting because I write a monthly column about graphic novels, and there's several things. I'm a big fan of... Colin Bunn's I'm just not doing too well this morning. I'm not remembering this. Oh, Six Gun. Sorry. The Six Gun, which is a horror Western, which is actually a subgenre I'm particularly a fan of. This morning I was rereading Dead in the West. Lansdale's Dead. It's Dora Lansdale's horror Western.
Sure.
Which is being reissued in paperback as Dead Man's Road with a bunch of other stories about the preacher by Tachyon later this year. And I'm looking over my shelf here. Chew is quite a book that I like quite a bit, actually.
What was that? Sorry, I missed it.
Chew? Chew is an interesting book. Chew is it's C-H-E-W, just like a, you know. Chew. It's by John Layman and Rob Gilroy, and it's in a reality where poultry is illegal because of swine flu. Or bird flu, sorry, not swine flu, because of bird flu. And so all chicken is illegal, and the FDA has all this power, and it's about two FDA agents. And one of them has the ability to bite into things in food and see its entire history.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, especially when he's investigating a murder and cannibalism comes in.
Sure.
It's a very interesting, you know. And, you know, there's some standards I like. I like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. The Alan Moore's, you know, his alternate reality, his literary alternate reality, you know, kind of like the ultimate mashups. And I'm also a big fan of older stuff. Kirby is one of my all-time favorites.
Sure.
Jack Kirby stuff. And with all the massive reprintings of his stuff, I've been very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of the stuff I've kind of been reading. Right. There's other stuff, of course. You know, I, like I said, I write the column for SF Site every month. So I read quite a few graphic novels.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Obviously, comic book movies are now huge blockbuster movies at the box office. Have you liked any of the recent superhero movies?
Yeah, some I've liked. Iron Man 3, I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was a nice, you know, their versions of Iron Man are quite good. Avengers is very good. It's interesting because Marvel seems to have really understood the how to translate their stuff to film, and while DC seems to have just the opposite problem, outside of Batman, nothing they've done has worked.
Sure.
And even the last Batman, and I'm on the other side of the fence, and a lot of people, I don't think the last Batman film worked. I don't think it was a very good movie. I thought it was got too far away from Batman. Batman should not work on a global scale. Batman works on a local scale. And Superman's just the opposite. He works on the global scale. And the new Superman movie, I'm real hesitant about it because I don't think Zack Snyder's a good director. I thought his Watchmen was awful. And I don't know if he can do a good Superman because Zack Snyder's movies all lacked heart. You know, they lack any compassion or humanity. And that's what Superman is about. Superman is all humanity and all compassion.
Right, right.
And I don't know if Zack Snyder can pull it off.
Interesting. We'll have to see in a few weeks.
The trailers look great. I'll say that.
They do.
Yeah.
So what impact do you think that these movies are having on the actual comic book industry, the monthly comic books?
Well, the biggest impact, actually, the monthly comic is not them, but the digital market. Comics have really made that jump to digital. So with the rise of the tablets, people are now, you know, downloading their monthly comic, their weekly comics, and then buying the collections when they get done. And that's had a bigger effect. The movies, I mean, they have an effect. But there are people that will see those movies, they'll never read those comics. The same thing, there are, you know, a zillion people will go see, you know, The Great Gatsby, but how many of them are going to read the book?
Sure, sure.
You know, it's not going to hurt the sales, of course. But it may not help. Also, comics, one of the problems with the comics industry has had for a long time, it's hard for somebody to just walk into a store and start reading them because they have these long, convoluted histories.
Right.
And so it can be difficult to get new readers that way. But, yeah, I'm sure it's helping to some degree. The exciting thing for me is that you get more mainstream books. You get books, like you go into the bookstores and you see rows of graphic novels now. You don't go in. It's not like it used to be. You know, when I did Weird Business, which came out in 96 or 95, there weren't really graphic novel sections in bookstores. And when that book came out, and oh, I should probably tell you, Weird Business, to people that are listening, have no idea probably what this is. It was a 420-page hardback comic anthology that I co-edited with Joe R. Lansdale. And we had all these big fantasy and horror writers in it. Of the time, like Charles DeLint did an original story. Nancy Collins, who was really popular at the time with her vampire stories, did an original story. Poppy Z. Bright, who was really popular then, did stories. F. Paul Wilson's got an original story in there. People like that.
Mm-hmm.
And when the book came out, it's a big hardback, and it's $30, which at the time was a lot of money for a graphic novel. And I would go in the bookstores, and I would find it like in the humor section. I would find it in the kids section, you know, because it's got pictures in it. But this wasn't for kids in any shape or form. There was no way you would want – I would feel uncomfortable giving it to a child, okay? It's just not for children. And because, but they had no place to put it. They didn't understand what it was. And of course, we had just the opposite problem in comic book shops because comic book shops didn't know what to do with it either because they weren't used to selling things that were hardback in that price point. Right. And I still remember having a discussion with a comic book shop owner, and I said, "Oh, did you order Weird Business?" He goes, "Yeah, I got one. I got two in." "Well, how did it sell?" "I sold two that first week." "Great. Did you reorder?" No. I was just thankful they sold." "Really?" I was like puzzled, and because at that time, two volumes of Weird Business was like selling 100 issues of X-Men, and I'm pretty sure if they sold 100 issues of X-Men in a week, they would reorder.
Yeah. Exactly.
It was interesting. So now, of course, I go into bookstores, and they're everywhere, graphic novels. And they market them right. They look, you know, they're in the right places, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So what do you think of the transition to digital with comic books?
I still prefer comics reading them. I read some digital. I can read a lot of digital, actually, because of the nature of what I do.
Right.
But you know, it's like anything else. You know, if it keeps it alive and viable, then it's great.
Sure.
You know, it's the same thing I have feelings about the ebook. You know, people reading books. My biggest problem actually with the ebook is that ebooks are not actually books. But that's a whole different discussion. They're just, you know, books are actual physical objects.
Sure.
But yeah, I just think the word's wrong. But I don't have a problem with it because it's allowed a lot of obscure books to come back and print, a lot of writers that people don't know about. Like, you can get almost all of Neil Barrett stuff now digitally, okay? Right. Neil Barrett's a really talented writer, really amazing writer, but a lot of his stuff's been out of print for a long time. I saw the other day through Darkest America, which is one of my favorite books of his, post-apocalyptic book, and it's back in print. And I was just so – I was like, wow, that's so cool. You know? And it's back in print digitally.
Right.
Yeah, it's like $1.99, something like that. Mm-hmm. $2.99. But I like that chance that these things can get back in the print and people can read them.
Sure.
Because really, that's what it's about. I don't agree with a lot of, like, I think DRM is evil.
Right.
I'm a big believer that, you know, that people should be able to have access to things. And also, my biggest problem is the way people learn about books. And this goes back to my book selling days, and I was a bookseller for 20 years. And the biggest way people learn about books is when people, friends give them copies of books. I mean, everybody, you know, your friend gives you a copy of a book, you're like, oh, this is great. You read it. And then 9 times out of 10, if you like it, you're going to buy another book by this author because you like the book that your friend gave you. But there's no way with digital books to just give your books away.
Right.
I can't just, you know, if I say, "Hey, Jeff, I'm reading this book. I love it." I can't just give it to you. I'm able, you know, on Amazon, I can loan it to you for 2 weeks. Big deal. I'm talking about, you know, I should be able to give you the book. It's my, I bought it. I own it. I should be able to do what I want with it.
Exactly.
Yeah, with physical object. And that is my biggest problem with it. And I think it's a real fallacy, and it's going to hurt the industry in the long run. Because it's going to prevent new readers from coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be harder for authors to get new readers, right, because of it.
Right.
And because it's, I mean, we've all seen it happen. It's happened. It's personally happened to anybody who reads books. It's happened to all of us. You know, somebody gives you a book to read, you go, "Hey, great." You know, and also the excitement that people have when they give you books to read. You know, and all, it just, like I said, it just changed things. It's funny because one thing, I love 50s pulp novels. And one of the hardest things to do is find them in good shape. And the reason is because people would buy them, just give them around to their friends. And these things would be read to death.
Right.
You know, and they'd fall apart. And that's why you can't find them in good shape. You know, so that whole culture is gone. But I do think that ebooks are a good idea because it keeps things going. You know, and it's cheaper. It enables things to happen. You can take a bigger chance on an ebook. I also think that they need to change the way they're paying people for ebooks because publishers are taking too much money because the overhead's so ridiculously low on an ebook. Why should the percentages be the same?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, but you know, that's not why you brought me here. You brought me on here by talking about apes, I think.
well, sorry. You mentioned your graphic novel column. Are you doing any other regular columns or essays that we should look out for?
No, not really. I mean, I do things here and there. You know, I write. You know, I blog at for Revolution SF. I was one of the original editors there. I was the fiction editor for Revolution SF, and then I stayed on as a contributing editor over the years. And I write reviews for them occasionally. And I do, nothing really at this moment. There's some people that I've talked. I just had a talk interview with somebody yesterday. Interview, I guess, a discussion about possibly doing some reviews for another site. But I don't. You know how it is. Until I actually start doing it, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm doing a lot of work for the San Antonio Business Journal, which would seem to be completely off my usual review. But I've been writing for them, and it's been interesting doing work for them. It's completely different. No geek writing at all there.
Right.
it pays the bills, and, you know, it's kind of fun to do. Sure, it's different. Sure. I like being able to do different things occasionally. It's funny because, as much as I like, apes and all that kind of stuff, every once in a while you want to do something different. It's like the site people I was talking to yesterday, I would give a chance to review non-geek films. And one of my things is I love a really good romantic comedy. They're so rare. And, so going out to be able to review some once in a while, that's great.
That's great.
As they say, you can't live just on steak. Every once in a while you have chicken dinner.
Exactly.
It's things like that. One thing I will mention about The Apes of Wrath, we were talking earlier, one of the things I'm proudest about this book is I think I'm the only person to ever publish an anthology with Gustave Flaubert and Edgar Rice Burroughs in the same book. Excuse me.
What was the first name? Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Gustave Flaubert. Wrote Madame Bovary.
Right.
Yes. I think I'm the only person to ever publish an anthology with the two of them in it. Flaubert is this major literary writer, and then there's Edgar Rice Burroughs. His story actually in the book is the creepiest story. I don't know if you've read the book or not, but it's the creepiest story in the book. It's a Flaubert story. It's a story he wrote when he was 17 about an anthropologist who breeds a slave with an orangutan. And the story's about their child.
Wow. Had you read that before? How did you know about that?
It's interesting. I read references about it. It's only been reprinted once in English before this time. And I found references to it. And I actually had never read the story. But I found the French edition of it, French version of it. And I was like, well, I'm going to get translated and I'm going to put it in the book, taking the chance that it was going to be good enough. But everything I had read about it was like, oh, I've got to have this in my book. If I'm going to do an ape book, I've got to have this story. And it is so creepy. It's so politically incorrect. And, but it was it turned out to be a wise choice because it is. It's an amazing story. And it really, it's funny. I sent this book to my mother-in-law. And she calls up my wife. And she's talking about how she thinks she likes my book. And she told my wife, though, that I should make sure I never send her another book with interspecies with sex in it ever again. I thought, wow. Okay, I'll see if I can put I'll check. Not on the list anymore. And I'm sure it's because what you got for that story. Because really, there's some other stories dealing with interspecies love, but there isn't like sex per se. And that story, it's in that story. So I thought, well, okay, I'll remember that. So the next anthology I got, there's no interspecies sex in it. So okay. It should be okay. I try not to have – you don't want that in every anthology.
No, exactly. Well, again, we've been speaking with Rick Claw, editor of the new anthology, The Apes of Wrath. Rick, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, sure. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.